Chapter 6. The Might of Ages. Marx. Execution.
"This is not real," said Tahira.
Beside her, Akil shook his head but said nothing. The cavern chamber extended away from them, its limits lost in a haze of engine heat and exhaust fumes. She took a slow breath, and the smell of metal, fuel, and hot engines filled her throat. She coughed, feeling her eyes sting and water. She blinked to clear her sight, and for a moment she wondered if she would open her eyes and find herself back inside the metal cocoon of her machine. Tanks. Hundreds. No, thousands of tanks filled the chamber. She recognized the turrets of Punishers, the long barrels of Vanquishers, and the wedge-shaped hulls of Malkadors, beside the dozens more that she could not name. The dappled colours of 100 regiments covered their hulls, and the men and women that worked on each machine wore uniforms that spoke of worlds spread far beyond Talarn. The sound of engines, shouted orders, and the ring of metal upon metal filled her ears in a grinding tide. It was not just an army. It was a host readying for war. And it was not alone. This scene was being repeated in every cavern beneath the Sapphire City. What remained of Tahira's squadron had reached the shelter 2 hours earlier. The last few kilometres had been less a dash and more of a slither. Lantern and Talon had inched past half-glimpsed shapes in the fog, winding their course around the light of distant explosions. Tahira had realised then what the lights in the sky had meant. The Iron Warriors had descended to Talarn's surface in a strength she had never dreamt they might possess. She had glimpsed a clutch of landing craft briefly through a break in the fog. The might of ages had poured onto Talarn. Walking war machines, mobile artillery platforms, and slab-hulled tanks. Even the half-living creatures of the Cybernetica stalked from the ships, like statues cast in clockwork and steel. Tahira had watched the enemy until they passed out of her sight and wondered if she would find the Sapphire City shelters already cracked open and dead. She had not. Instead, she had found them ringed with armour and filled with weapons of war. Almost unable to walk, their eyes bloodshot and their skin raw from days in their suits, Tahira's remaining crew had passed through decontamination to find the shelter filled with a whirl of activity. Tens of thousands of men and women moved through the chambers and corridors. It had been too much for some. Vale had just slumped to the floor, his back against the wall, and shaken his head. Udo had begun to grin and babble. Tahira herself had not said a word, but had just stood for a full 5 minutes watching the flow of people. Then she had started to walk. Akil had followed her, silent and wide-eyed. They had slipped down the bustling corridors, drawing looks as they failed to salute. At last they had reached the cavern where, all those months ago, she and her crew had skidded the tank across the bare Plazcrete. And there she had seen why the Iron Warriors had come to the surface for them now. It was not just because Talarn had been reinforced. It was because from that moment on this war would no longer be weighted in the Legion's favour.
"Space Marines," said Akil in a low voice,
and Tahira followed his gaze to where half a dozen figures stood beside three enclosed speeders. Their armour was white, but chipped and scarred so that the grey ceramite showed beneath the paint. Jagged crimson patterns were splashed across their greaves, pauldrons and helmets, and hanks of black horsehair woven with bones swung from their belts as they moved.
And how they moved.
Tahira found she was thinking of how snakes glided over the ground, fluid and unhurried, yet ready to strike. One of them had his head bared and turned to face her. Eyes the blue of cold skies met Tahira's stare. In that second she wanted to run, to bury herself behind plasteel and rockcrete. She jerked her gaze away from the Space Marines.
"What happens now?" asked Akil from beside her.
She did not reply, but reached into the pocket of her fatigues and pulled out a low stick. Carefully she put it between her lips and clicked an igniter until it produced a blue cone of flame. Her hair was plastered to her scalp, the locks sheened with grease. Dirt had gathered in the creases of her face. A raw mark from her collar seal ran around her neck like the imprint of a shackle. She noticed that her hands were steady, but the glowing tip of the low stick trembled as it burned. She met her own eyes in the fingerprint-smeared mirror of the igniter's case. Hardness and tiredness looked back at her. She thought of Brill.
Light of terror. I look like him now.
She closed her eyes and inhaled the smoke.
Tahira,
said Ekil. She felt the moisture on her cheeks.
What is going on?
She thought. She opened her eyes. Tears were rolling down her face, smearing the grime into streaks. They did not feel like they belonged to her. Her throat tightened. She felt the tremors begin to run through her, and she clamped down on the memories that were bubbling up inside. She breathed deeply until the tears stopped. Akil said nothing, and she did not look at him. She did not want to, just in case she saw tears in his eyes too. In her still blurred vision, the gathered rows of machines looked like frozen waves in an ugly iron sea. A few feet from her, a soldier in blue fatigues was feeding chains of rounds into an ammo hopper. Further away, a girl, no, not a girl, a soldier, was laughing as she swung down from the turret of a vanquisher.
Lackland died when we were almost here.
I know, said Akil gently. I saw you take him out of the machine.
She was really shaking now. The world beyond her eyes was a smudged blur. Akil's voice came again, low and measured.
Tahira, it's not your fault.
It was my fault. I ordered him to fire. I knew what might happen, that the gun might overheat.
She paused and blinked.
He moaned for hours. I just wanted him to be quiet. His suit was breached, you see, so we could hear. Part of me kept wanting him to be quiet, but he kept moaning. I thought he was trying to say someone's name. Then he was quiet and...
She felt a bitter laugh come from behind her teeth.
And I was relieved. For a moment, I was relieved.
Akil said nothing, and when she looked at him, he was looking down at his left hand as though he did not want to meet her eye. She was suddenly aware of how old he must be. He had daughters, he had said. She wondered how old they had been. The memory of Akil's question drifted into her mind.
What happens now?
Slowly she got control of herself, composure forming like armor. She stopped shaking, feeling the ball of memories and emotions scratching against the inside of the door she'd just closed on them.
Now, Akil, she began,
as if he'd only just asked the question. She forced dead calm and control into each word. Akil looked up at her, and she caught a flash of something in his eyes as she spoke.
Now, it happens all over again.
Akil let the flow of bodies carry him through the shelter. They pressed close to him, jostling him, shoving past on their way to wherever they were going. None of them looked at him, except perhaps with a glance that asked who this unwashed and bearded man was who was blocking their way. He did not mind. In fact, he liked it. Just walking, not deciding where to go, letting his mind drift with his feet. Occasionally, he even felt as though he was walking through the tangled streets of his youth, hearing the cries of the sellers and the raised voices as they argued a price. He smiled. An officer in an azure field cap caught the expression and must have thought he was mocking him, because Akil saw the man's forehead crease and his mouth open. Akil saluted, bobbing his head respectfully, and passed on. He did not know where he was going, but that was all right. For now it was the best he could hope for.
Akil Sulan.
He only half heard the voice the first time and did not bother to look around. Akil Sulan was no one now, just another raider, another body for the Battle of Talarn. The world where that name had meant something was gone. No, the voice calling his name had been just a trick of his hearing. A half-familiar sound spat out of the noise of dozens of voices and hurrying feet.
"You are Akil Sulan."
The voice was just behind him this time, and he felt a hand upon his shoulder. His own hand moved to where he still carried his dagger.
"No, no, my friend,"
said the voice, now just beside his ear. It was a soft voice that purred with the accents of Talarn's southernmost city-state. He felt a blade point as it pricked the skin above his right kidney.
"I mean you no harm, honored worthy, but you must come with me."
Akil felt a hollow void open in the base of his thoughts.
Honored worthy.
No one had called him that since the night the bombardment had started.
"Who are you?"
he managed to say. Around him, the crowd of soldiers, acolytes, and servitors moved on, unseeing and uncaring.
"A servant of a friend, honored worthy. He wishes to see you again."
Akil felt the pressure behind the knife tip shift to the space under his left arm as the grip on his shoulder loosened. A man stepped from behind him so that he was close by Akil's left side. A hand draped around Akil's shoulders, as if they were old comrades. The knife would be invisible to anyone who looked at them. Akil could not hide the shock on his face as he looked at the man. He wore a deep red uniform crossed with black frogging and pinned with silver rank bars. A broad, clean-shaven face smiled at Akil from beneath a peaked cap.
"Forgive the blade, but my service to our mutual friend means that I cannot allow you to refuse this request."
The man's accent had suddenly changed. It was hard and crisp, all traces of the southern accent gone. Akil could smell a touch of liqueur and rich smoke on the man's breath, as if he might have just come from an officer's card table. Akil's mind was whirling, his fatigue and shock blending and blurring. The months in the shelter, or inside the hull of Talon, seeing the world above, killing and trying to forget, it all fell into the growing dark within him. In his memory, he saw Jalen standing on the balcony beside him as night fell for the last time over the Sapphire City.
"Things will change, honored Sulan,"
Jalen had said, and the emerald lizards tattooed across his face had seemed to squirm.
"You need to accept that before you take another step."
"I understand," Akil had said, and turned to look the man in the eye. "What do you require of me?"
The memory faded, but the tattooed face lingered as he looked at the man in the red officer's uniform.
"Jalen,"
he said. The man, who looked like an officer, smiled and nodded.
"He is close. Come with me."
The room was small, no more than a box of bare plazcrete hidden behind a small door at the end of a quiet passage, as if it had been made to be forgotten. Harsh light filled the space from a single lumen orb that hung from a chain in the ceiling. A trio of plasteel crates rested upon the floor, their edges scuffed and their tops covered in a thick layer of dust. The room smelled of dust, too, dust and stale air. Akil took in everything with a glance and turned back to the man in the red officer's uniform.
"Wait here,"
said the man, and pulled the bare metal door shut. Akil let out a breath and pressed his fingers against his eyes. His hands trembled against his eyelids. He tried to steady his thoughts, to decide what he was going to do.
"Hello, my friend."
Akil's eyes snapped open. The man who stood inside the closed door gave a friendly smile and a small bow. He was tall and looked to be well into middle age, but the green eyes still spoke of years lived that did not show on his face. The oil-stained overalls of a low-level menial hung from the man's lean frame, the sleeves rolled up to show thin but muscular arms. His hairless head gleamed in the light. The smile still clung to the man's lips as he took a step forward.
"Jalen,"
said Akil.
"It is good to see you,"
said Jalen. His voice was rich,
calm and unhurried.
I am sorry. It must be something of a shock. I apologize. I have been here for a while, but I thought it best that our paths did not cross. After all, things have changed since we last met.
Akil just stared at Jalen. He thought of the two of them looking out over the sapphire city, of the last light of the sun catching the sides of the buildings and turning the distant sea to the blue of midnight. Jalen nodded, as if he were remembering the same moment.
Much has changed, but we two still remain, said Jalen,
and as he spoke, coloured patterns appeared on his skin, spreading and growing like ivy choking a sunlit wall. Emerald lizards crawled over his neck and face, their bodies, tail and legs interlocking without a gap. Turquoise feathers enfolded his forearms, as delicate spirals in red and black unfolded over his palms and wound up his fingers. Jalen's smile cracked the tattooed jungle of his face. Akil felt a pain in his chest. He sucked down a breath, and the rage filled him hot and acidic. His hands came up, and suddenly the smooth skin of Jalen's neck was in his hands, and he was ramming the tattooed man back against the wall and squeezing and squeezing. Then his hands were empty, and he was spinning and falling, and he could not breathe. He hit the floor and felt what little breath was in his lungs burst from his mouth. He rolled and gasped. Jalen was standing over him, looking down, hands loose by his sides.
You should have tried the blade,
said Jalen, and lifted a hand to show a knife held in his left hand. Subtle waves ran through the polished curve of the blade, and the dark wooden hilt glinted with inlaid silver. It was Akil's knife, the knife his grandfather had given him, the knife he carried even when inside his machine. Jalen held the blade up, his eyes flickering down its length until they met Akil's stare.
If you mean to kill someone, do it with one blow. Is that not what they say here?
Akil fought against the pain in his chest. The rage was still there, binding with the pain until they were almost one. He rolled to his knees and sucked a ragged gulp of air.
You kill my world,
he gasped and tried to stand.
No.
Jalen shook his head as he sat on one of the metal crates. He leaned forward, elbows resting on his knees, hands held together loosely. Akil's knife had vanished.
No, we did not.
Akil felt his heart hammering in his chest. He thought of going for the door, of screaming that an enemy infiltrator was inside the shelter. Then he thought of the man in the red officer's uniform, the man whose voice had changed so smoothly. He looked up now at the man who'd promised to save Talan from its slow death. Jalen looked back, calm, impassive, waiting. Akil turned his head away, remembering the slow dread building inside him as he had watched Talan fade from prosperity, its sheen of wealth sustained by habit and the dwindling fat of past fortune. The Imperium had raised them up, and then had turned its face away, uncaring of what the future held for those who had served it. Then the war between Horus and the Emperor had begun, but it had not touched Talan. The future of his world, of his daughter's world, had seemed just as bleak as before. Then, just when Akil could see nothing ahead but the cold blackness of despair, Jalen had found him and offered some hope. Akil turned and looked up at the off-worlder's green eyes. He sucked in a deep breath and spat. Jalen shook his head slowly.
I never lied to you. The things we talked of, the plans we made, all were true. We wanted to restore Talan, to save it from the gradual decline you knew was coming. We wanted to give it back its future.
Akil pushed his hands down, trying to get more air, trying to rise, trying to get up and take Jalen's neck. He would kill him, here and now. He began to rise, limbs shaking.
Listen to me, Akil, said Jalen, raising his hands, palms open. Listen to me. This was not our doing.
Cramped pain flared across Akil's torso as he tried to straighten, failed, and dropped back to one knee. Air panted between his bared teeth. He squeezed his eyes shut, his forehead beaded with sweat. Slowly he felt the pain in his chest unlock. But still he did not move.
Why?
The word formed on his lips before he could bite it back, and he realized that it was the question he'd been asking without hope of answer ever since the Iron Warriors had murdered his world.
Why, Jalen? We were close. Another few months and the governor would have fallen. You said that there would be no war, that the Warmaster wanted Talan whole again. I believed that. Every coin I spent to buy the ear of the other cities, every name I passed you, everything was because I believed it. I believed the Warmaster would save us.
Jalen shook his head, sorrow creasing the tattoos around his eyes.
Akil. There is nothing left, roared Akil.
He gulped a breath and felt the tears on his face.
There is nothing left.
You will not believe me. I can see that. But I tell you truly that we had no hand in what was done here. Others acted in a way that we had not anticipated. But you are still here, and so are we. And there is something that you can do to save Talan's future, Akil.
He paused, and Akil looked up to see that the sorrow had faded from Jalen's eyes.
There is something left?
Akil shook his head, but coldness had spread through him at Jalen's words.
What could you possibly?
Your daughters, Akil. Both of them alive and well, and hoping that you are too.
Akil said nothing. He could say nothing. Voices spiraled through his thoughts.
Let it be true. Please let it be true. No, it cannot be. Oh, Terra, where are they? Can they be alive? Is it a trick, a lie? How is this possible?
Jalen tilted his head as though he were listening. Then he reached into a thigh pocket and pulled out a battered data slate and keyed it to wakefulness. The screen was cracked and smeared with fingerprints, but the images that moved across its surface held Akil still. Two small faces framed by curls of black hair, dark eyes wide and wary. As Akil looked, one glanced at the other as if for reassurance.
Mina, he thought. It is all right. It will be all right.
He felt his eyes sting and his throat lock.
You see, said Jalen softly.
In the screen, a tattoo-covered hand extended into the image, palm up as if asking for something. Akil watched as Emerita nodded to her sister, and Mina placed a small strip of woven fabric in the tattooed palm. The hand withdrew and the image cut out. Akil looked up at Jalen. The tattooed man was holding out an open hand. The red, orange, and blue threads were worn, and the edges frayed, but the colours were still as bright as the day he'd last seen it flicking around at the end of Mina's braid. He reached out and took the small piece of fabric and stared at it for a long moment. When he looked up, he could feel the coldness spreading under his skin once more. It took him a second to speak.
What do you want from me?
Jalen nodded without smiling, his face without expression.
In 17 minutes, all units in this shelter will be called to deploy in the world above. They will join those already ringing the entrances. The Iron Warriors and their allies have come in force. They mean to break the armies that have come to your aid, then to break open this shelter and make it their own, their first fortress from which to fight the rest of this battle.
The rest of the battle?
Yes. The forces that now fill your shelter and war in the skies above are just the beginning. More will come and more still to aid the Iron Warriors. More and more flesh and iron poured onto this world until it is choked, and both sides have nothing more to give and no more blood left to spill.
Akil snorted and shook his head.
Is that what you want to happen, or what you fear?
Very good, said Jalen.
A sudden smile sent the lizards squirming over his cheeks.
I should have remembered the reasons we came to you. You always were clever, Akil. But now you must listen.
Jalen's face was no longer smiling. His expression was hard, his eyes unblinking. Akil felt as though he could not look away from the face that suddenly seemed something very far from friendly.
In the battle to come, you will receive a signal with a single word. When you hear that word, you must let the forces that are approaching you at that time pass. No harm will come to you, but they must pass.
Pass? And reach the shelter? Akil paused and Jalen inclined his head.
What will happen then?
You will run and live again, and so will your daughters.
How could they find me in the middle of a battle?
Jalen's eyes seemed to sparkle.
They will find you.
Akil let out a breath. He wanted to close his eyes to fall back into the soft world of sleep and dreams in which the path in front of him did not exist, a world where this choice was not his to make. The woven threads brushed his skin as he moved his hand.
A choice, said a voice from the cold core of his mind. There never was a choice.
What will the word in the signal be?
Salvation.
Jalen stood, handed Akil back his knife, and raised the palm of his left hand. The swirls and patterns of the tattoos caught the hazy glow of the light. Akil had a momentary impression of feathers and scales. And then a new pattern spread across Jalen's palm in luminous green. Two lines joined to form a triangle without a base. Reptilian heads and serpentine necks coiled around the symbol, their eyes and scales shimmering with cold light. Akil hesitated, then raised his left hand and felt his own palm tingle as the Electu lit for only the second time in his life. Jalen closed his palm and gave a small bow. The tattooed patterns drained from his skin as he turned and stepped towards the door.
Do not worry, my friend, said Jalen, his hand on the door latch. You are on the right side.
Sound filled the cavern. It billowed into the air from 10,000 engines and rattled with hatches locking shut. It grew like the waking growl of a vast beast made of metal and turning gears. Tahira ran through the growing swell of sound. She dodged loading servitors and ran down the fume-filled corridors between tanks. She had been asleep when the deployment order had begun blaring from the Vox system. The contents of a bottle had been helping her not to dream. They had not done a good job. She had awoken thinking that it was happening again, that the bombs were falling and that the killing fog would fill the shelter. Then she had recognized the full alert signal and laughed to herself. It was happening all over again, just in a different way. A Malkador heavy tank began to grind backwards as she ran past it, almost catching her under its tracks. She swore at its metal back and kept moving. She was tired, so damn tired. Tired enough to just stop and let whatever would happen be. But she ran anyway, pulling the seals on her enviro suit shut, looking for the lantern amongst the ranks of machines. Every tank that could turn a track or wheel was scrambling to deploy. There were to be no exceptions, and if she was not there, the lantern would roll into the world above without her. She would not let that happen. No matter how tired she felt, no matter how much she thought that most of the machines here would end up as coffins for their crews, still she would not leave her machine and crew to go to war without her.
Tahira!
She twisted, looking for a familiar face. Yudo stood half out of Lantern's turret hatch, the hood and mask of his envirosuit hanging down his chest like flayed skin. A grin spread across his unshaven face.
"Why, on terror, are you smiling?"
Udo looked puzzled for a moment, and the grin faltered.
"Oh, sorry, boss," he muttered.
She had a feeling she knew why he was with Lantern rather than with Akil and Talon. She shook her head. Her eyes felt gritty with incomplete sleep and going too far down the bottle to get there.
"Just good to know you're coming out with us,"
he said. She ignored the remark and clambered onto the top of her machine. Its camouflage scheme was long gone, stripped by decontamination and the air of the world above. A patina of dull colours and chips now covered Lantern's hull, like stains on a butcher's apron. The main gun was cool and silent, the length of its outer cowling scorched black from the weapon's own heat.
"Out of the turret,"
she said to Udo with a jerk of her head. He opened his mouth and took a breath to speak. She really did not want this, not now. Not ever, in fact.
You need a new gunner."
"One of the sponson gunners will take the main gun."
"They haven't got a clue, Tar."
"It's Lieutenant Tahira," she spat. "And before you point out more of the blindingly obvious, yes, I know that it will leave me with one sponson down. But you seem keen to leave Akil with no gunner at all, so get out of my machine and get to your own."
"He's not here, Tar, Lieutenant."
"What?"
Udo shrugged.
"Akil, I haven't seen him for hours."
Tahira just looked at him for a second.
What the hell was she supposed to do now? A squadron of one? Great. Just great.
High above her, a muster horn sounded into the cavern. The lights began to pulse, turning everything to a strobing yellow twilight. Hatches clattered shut across a field of tanks.
"Lieutenant!"
She looked around. Akil was standing next to Lantern's left flank. He was panting, sweat beading his forehead. His enviro suit looked as if he'd rushed to pull it on as he ran. That almost made her laugh. Udo's shoulders slumped.
"Both of you, get to your machine and get ready to move."
Udo did not argue. She swung up onto Lantern's turret and dropped inside. The rest of the crew were already there, compulsively checking equipment. She reached up to pull the hatch down, then paused. For a second, she saw the cavern laid out before her, the blunt shapes of war machines waiting under the pulsing light and the blare of the horns. The machines nearest the doors started their engines, and the rumble of them rose in a chorus. Fumes belched from exhausts. For a long moment, Tahira just watched, waiting until the warning lights around the outer doors turned to green. Then she pulled the hatch shut, and Lantern was her entire world once again. The Iron Warriors burnt the remains of the Sapphire City before their assault. Fire fell from the sky, salted from the ships in orbit high above. Flames rolled through the skeletons of buildings, gathering small cyclones of heat around themselves as they fed. Phosphex flowed down streets, eating through stone and iron with a crackling hunger. Hammer blows of ordnance reduced buildings to rubble even as they burned. The light of the flames turned the smoke and fog into sheets of blood-red and pus-yellow. The ships stopped firing, and for a moment the corpse of the Sapphire City was allowed simply to burn. Then the long-range guns took up the beat, and the dead city shook again as the Iron Warriors advanced from the coastal plain. Mountains rose to the north of the advancing host, their tops lost in the fog. On their southern flank, the sludge-clotted ocean sat like a black mirror. The Iron Warriors came in clusters and waves, a grinding tide of iron 30 kilometres wide and 100 deep. The siege engines were the first to enter the dead city. Block-hulled machines with skirts of riveted ceramite ground the rubble to powder under their tracks. Wide-mouthed guns jutted from their hulls and turrets, and armoured dozer blades shunted rubble aside as though it were freshly fallen snow. They crossed into the maze of rubble-choked roads and shattered buildings, orspecks sifting the ruins for their enemy. Splinters of stone pattered on their hulls as the dust of the bombardment settled. The crews of these behemoths were not iron warriors, though they bore the marks of service to Perturabo and his sons. They pressed forward for 10 meters, 100 meters, 200 meters, and still nothing. Signals flickered between the advancing machines. Had anyone seen anything? Why were there no wrecks? Perhaps the bombardment had already destroyed the enemy. The 17th Company of the 81st Galibed Oathsworn had served beside the Iron Warriors for 2 decades. It had been their machines that had advanced into the fury of the Lacomille Gap on Tarnik IV, and Perturabo himself had ordered the company reborn after its death on Nasibis. Now they advanced at the tip of the first wave, 30 Malkador, Demolisher and Thunderer siege tanks in coal black. The Oathsworn had passed through 5 kilometres of silent cityscape when they became the first true casualties of the battle. On a gully floor that had once been the city's widest road, a line of green light flicked out from ruins to the side of the Oathsworn column. The luminous beam touched the hull of a Demolisher tank and burrowed into its heart. The tank vanished, its hull exploding outwards in a ragged cloud. The 2 machines to either side of it flipped over like tossed playing cards. The beam of green light disappeared, and then flicked out again. Another tank vanished. Inside the advancing Oathsworn vehicles, Auspex screens began to light with heat and energy blooms. The siege tanks began to fire, coughing fat shells into the ground in front of them. More fire came from amongst the ruins as the hidden tanks of the defenders came to life and fired. Across the width of the city, from north to south, the defenders emerged from their prepared ambush sites. Hundreds of tanks died in moments, their hulls punctured or split by explosions. More defenders emerged from the maze of ruins to kill and kill again. To the south, in the water-choked ruins along the coast, walking machines of the Mechanicum pulled themselves from drowned tunnels. Twice the height of men, but without flesh or faces, they stalked through the ruins, lightning reaching from their weapon arms to crawl across tank hulls and cook the crews inside. For a moment, the invaders' advance faltered. Then a second wave of attackers broke over the first. The defenders who had survived the bombardment died then. They died in fire, their hulls holed through, their bodies blown into rags of skin and meat. They died in the gaps between heartbeats, their ears ringing with the bellow of shell impacts. They died thinking 1,000 thoughts of home and faces they would never see again. Akil felt the shaking blows of falling shells as Talon crested the ramp's edge. To either side of him, more machines poured out from the protection of the earth. Fragments of light and colour flashed through the view slits. Columns of fire illuminating the fog, lighting up the black bones of buildings. Everything was shaking. His mouth was paper dry, the rubber smell of the suit thick in his throat.
"Watch out!"
screamed Udo, and Akil just had time to yank Talon to one side before it rammed into the machine in front. He cursed. Tanks were pouring from the shelter entrance so close together that it was like a herd of cattle jostling at a field gate. Shells exploded amongst them, flipping their hulls over and leaving wide craters in the ground. Akil pushed Talon forwards, keeping the shape of lantern in his view. He could barely see where he was going, and the general vox was a wall of incoherent noise.
"This is not a battle," he thought. "It is a riot."
He keyed the squadron frequency.
"Where the hell are we going?"
he shouted into the vox.
2 kilometres out, then halt," came Tahira's voice. "We are forming a line to the southeast to meet the enemy before they can reach the central shelter entrances. The same is happening to shield the northern and southern entrances."
"That's it?"
"That's all the commanders could agree between them. So that's the plan. That's what the hidden units on the surface bought us. Time to get out and form a line across the city."
Akil shook his head.
"How many enemy are there?"
"I don't know. 10,000? 50? "And we are just going out to meet them. What choice do we have? If they reach the entrances, they will burn through. And then we have no hope."
Her voice cracked, and he could hear the exhaustion through the vox distortion.
Winning is the only way we have to live.
Akil said nothing, and after a moment keyed the vox off. The Iron Warriors hit the defenders around the northern shelter entrance in a wedge of 300 machines. At its tip, 7 fell blades punched into the still-forming lines of defenders like a mailed fist into a flakboard. A few defenders had tried to stand before the super-heavy tanks, their guns firing at the huge machines. Accelerator cannons answered, punching shells through buildings and armour. Black clouds of smoke thumped into the air, flattening and splitting to show the red fire within. The lesser Iron Warriors' machines followed, killing the half-dead and the crippled. Vindicators and mortar carriers lobbed shells in front of the column's advance, the overlapping explosions unfolding like scattered flowers. The Loyalist line buckled. Machines still exiting the northern shelter entrance met machines pulling back from the Iron Warriors' advance. A tangle of machines formed for a kilometre around the entrance. In the south of the city, the Titans advanced with the Iron Warriors' forces. 2 battle groups clad in black iron and scorch-streaked orange striding through the murk, their void shields shimmering with the rain patter of fire. Every few moments all the Titans would seem to pause, and then they would fire as one. Lines of white-hot energy cracked the ground, and torrents of shells and missiles fell like rain at the edge of a storm cloud. Their advance had been resisted, but they had obliterated all who stood against them. As the dust of their latest salvo settled, the Titans bellowed their mechanical war cries across the burning ruins. Then the first of the towering machines broke from the pack. Sunderer loped down the shoreline, its splayed toes sinking into the sludge and slime. It was a warhound, the smallest of its breed, but no less a god of destruction for that. 100 metres behind, its twin followed, head and weapons swaying with its accelerating strides. They had already taken their first kills, a maniple of cyberneticae and a squadron of dirty-hulled battle tanks. They had been easy prey, nothing of note to machines of their kind. Within Sunderer's head, the crew listened to the signals boil out of the city. Thousands of the reinforcement vehicles had gathered in the Sapphire City to defend a shelter hidden beneath the ruins. It did not matter. Victory was simply a matter of time. Without warning, a stuttering line of fire rose from amongst the ruins and struck Sunderer. The Warhound's void shields burst and explosive shells hammered into its head. The Titan shook its skull, like a dog trying to shake a swarm of fire wasps from its fur, and half-blinded fired back. Plasma and bolt shells spat from its weapons and churned the ruins around it to dust and glowing vapour. Sunderer's attackers fired again, just once. The volcano cannon beam punched through its lupine skull in a shriek of vaporized metal. The Warhound fell with a roar of shearing metal and unwinding gears. The last transmission sent by its princeps was a warning to its kin.
Shadow swords!
The signal screamed. But by then another god of metal was already falling. Tahira felt her eyelids start to drift shut. Nothing moved in the plaza. Edged by the mounds of rubble, the paving stones had been cracked and blackened by shellfire. But it still felt like a circle of calm in the chaos that boiled around them. Here, they were the line, the defence that stood against the enemy advance. But if it had not been for the din of the vox and the explosions lighting the fog in the distance, she would have thought that they were alone. Adrenaline had faded soon after they'd reached their assigned position, leaving fatigue to hang heavily upon her.
Terra, I just want to sleep, she thought.
Beside her, Vale tried to stretch in the unfamiliar main gunner's seat. A few minutes earlier, a mortar shell had fallen into the plaza. The dull crack had startled them all, but nothing had followed the shell. Somewhere to the north, the Iron Warriors were pushing hard. The south was holding, and the centre seemed almost forgotten. At least that was what she could tell from the vox. The war was definitely out there, though. The fog fizzed with its light, and its fury trembled through her flesh. But it was all far from here. Looking out at the still plaza, she felt as if she were an insect caught beneath an upturned glass.
Anything?
Akil's voice clicked over the vox.
Nope, she replied. She was looking at the plaza through a sight block on top of the turret. The view was unaugmented, but that did not matter. There was nothing to see. Lantern and Talon were hull down behind the rubble of a building at the plaza's western edge, just the two of them to cover the plaza and hold the half-kilometre to either side. There had been other tanks covering the area at first, but they had pulled north. The worst part was that she did not care. She was fairly sure that the others on this section of the line had moved off without orders. They were fresh, newly dropped, and they wanted to see the battle, to get their hands dirty, to claim some kills. It almost made her laugh to think about it. She had to stay, and she only had half a functional squadron. She knew that she should have been annoyed by it, but she found that she really, really did not care. If it stayed quiet, then that was fine by... The land speeder roared across the plaza. A pressure wave split the fog as it banked hard, the air beneath it shimmering with anti-grav disruption. Tahira caught an impression of hard lines and deep blue armour before the skimmer cut back into the ruins and vanished. The echo of its passing faded slowly.
"What the hell was that?"
shouted Vale. Tahira thumbed the squadron vox.
"Full alert. Fire at any target." "What the..."
Vale began.
"A scout, a land speeder. Looks like it's our turn at last."
Vale went silent.
"You sure it was an enemy, Tar?"
"No." She paused. No, she really was not sure about much at the moment. The skimmer had been blue, she was certain of that. But what did that mean?
"Right now I'm working on a rule that anything coming from in front of us means us harm."
Vale turned his head towards her, and she could tell that he was about to say something. A burst of noise ripped from her headset, filling her head with screeching static. She pressed her hands to her head, scrabbling at the suit hood. The static screamed higher and higher, and then dissolved into a clicking rush, like the burbling of a broken machine. She heard someone yell and wondered if it had been her. The sound vanished, leaving a faint ringing in her ears.
"Now what? I see something."
It was Vantine from the right sponson.
"Sharp eyes, that girl," thought Tahira.
"Confirm,"
she called.
"I have them,"
called Vale, his face pressed against the gun sight.
"Incoming."
Tahira was already looking into her own sight. Something moved on the opposite side of the plaza. She flicked to infravision, and there they were, low, hard-edged shapes, hulls hot and exhaust fumes trailing cooling plumes behind them. She recognised the angles and the shape of the weapons jutting from their turrets. Executioners and vanquishers? Why wasn't Vale firing? The question flashed across her mind. She opened her mouth to order the shot. Her eyes flicked to the Auspex. The targets were there, but each one was pulsing between red and blue, between friendly and hostile. She remembered the first mission into the world above, the moment she had thought that they had hit one of their own machines. She bit her lip behind her breath mask.
"How the hell did they end up in front of the line?"
said Vale. Tahira did not reply, but cursed and thumbed the vox.
"Hold fire!"
she shouted.
"They could be friendlies. All units, only fire on my command."
The machines kept coming through the ruins. "They must be able to see us," she thought, "just like we can see them. But they're not firing either." She thumbed the vox to wide broadcast.
"Unknown units, code phrase, confirm, vengeance," she said,
and waited for the one word that would confirm that the machines coming at them were not enemies. Raider. A simple word that would mean that this was not the start of another battle. A fresh surge of vox static and the rising beat of her heart filled the waiting silence.
Akil heard Tahira's challenge across the vox, and his gaze remained fixed on Lantern. He felt as if he could see each of the rivets and marks on the armour plates. Power trembled through its bulk, held back, poised.
Its main gun was primed to fire, heat fuming from the barrel. The las cannon in the unmanned left sponson hung loose, like the arm of a dead man. Blood was hammering through his skull.
"Identify yourselves," came Tahira's voice again. "Code phrase confirm, vengeance."
"What's going on?"
said Udo. Akil didn't answer.
"Why aren't we firing? Let me hear the squadron vox."
Akil licked his lips. The vehicles approaching from the other side of the plaza had still not answered. He felt the moment stretch. He could feel every seam of his envirosuit against his skin, the air sucking from the breath mask, the shape of the knife in the pouch on his thigh. The vox crackled again, then produced an unfamiliar voice.
"Unknown unit, this is Captain Sildar of Alarian 56th. Please reciprocate identification."
Akil let out a breath he did not know he'd been holding. They were friendly. A unit lost out beyond the holding line. This was not the moment. He did not have to choose yet. The approaching machines would just pass by, or perhaps they would join them on the line. Everything would be all right. He did not have to choose. Perhaps he never would. But the silence lengthened. He could almost see Tahira staring at the blue icons on her Auspex screen, weighing up possibilities. Choosing.
"Negative," said Tahira. "Please confirm code phrase."
"Salvation," the other voice replied.
"Fire!"
shouted Tahira, and closed her eyes as las blasts bleached the sight view. The twin cracks of the las cannons firing echoed through the hull. Her teeth began to ache as the capacitors dragged power for the next shot. Then her eye was back at the sight. The lead enemy vehicle had slewed to the side, ploughing into a half-collapsed wall. Heat dribbled from its wounded hull. Behind it, the other machines were trying to move out of the firing line.
"What if I was wrong?" she thought,
hearing the plasma destroyer begin to whine as it focused.
"What if the code phrases had got mixed up?"
But there was no room for doubt. This was not a war of human fallibility. It was a war of machines. The executioner fired, and Lantern's compartment filled with furnace heat. The plasma hit the leading enemy on its barrel. The shell in its weapon breech exploded and tore the turret from the hull. Tahira was already looking past the wreck at the other enemy machines. There were four at least. They would need to kill or cripple two more before they returned fire.
Why had they not returned fire?
The thought rose and snagged in her mind even as she watched an executioner that was the mirror of Lantern grind backwards on its tracks at the opposite side of the plaza.
If they are the enemy, why did they not have their guns loaded and ready?
Lantern's plasma destroyer was building power again, sucking plasma from the storage flasks with a high-pitched whine. The las cannons fired again, one bolt of energy punching through a broken wall in a shower of superheated dust. The second drew a molten line across the armour of a vanquisher.
Two shots. Just two shots in a squadron with three working las cannons.
She thumbed the vox.
"Akil, get Udo to fire! Curse you, fire!"
Akil pulled the knife out. For a second he looked at it, its curve shining like a waning moon. He had possessed it all his life. He had used it, of course. He'd been taught how to use it. But it had never taken a life until now. The blood slid down the blade's edge, already seeming to clot. Around him the air sang with the muffled sounds of battle. He looked at Udo. The boy was slumped forward over his gun mount. The puncture in his suit was a red-edged smile under his ribs. Salvation. The word rang around him, blurring with memories. Jalen's face. His daughters staring back from the screen of a data slate. The fire falling from Talan's sky.
"I am..."
The words formed and then caught on his lips.
"I am so sorry."
He pulled Udo's body back from the gun mount. Blood sloshed inside the suit and ran from the gash. He dropped the knife, not looking where it fell. The las cannon felt unfamiliar to his touch. The light of the gunsight filled his eyepiece. He traversed the las cannon. Lantern's rear armor filled the sight with red blooms of heat. The trigger was stiff against his finger.
"Akil!" came Tahira's voice, angry and concerned. "Akil, speak! If you can hear me, get that gun firing now!"
But what if Jalen had lied?
The question came again, as it had with every breath for the last few hours. Akil closed his eyes. The world was hissing and roaring with weapons fire.
But what if he had not?
Tahira's voice was in his ear, telling him to fire, asking what was wrong. His hands felt numb.
"Akil!"